Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, all, and welcome into the reverb going on all over the place there for a moment. All right. Hopefully that settled down. Fright House Mike coming to you here from the Fright House Sports Garage. And we're just getting ready to kick back for about 90 minutes or so and talk a little motorsports, talk NASCAR in particular. Talk about that mess that was Pocono last week. That was without a doubt, I don't know what to say. I mean, honestly, we were talking about it a lot on this program last Sunday morning, and frankly, somebody's got to wake up over at NASCAR and just fix the schedule. That's the bottom line, because I think what happened at Pocono was positively disgraceful. It was a mess. And that's, you know, we're going to talk about the outcome. The outcome is not my problem. That's not my biggest issue. My issue is just with the conduct of the entire weekend itself. But we're going to get into it. We'll get into all of that. Before I move on here, I gotta bring this up. Mechanics here in the garage. This morning's broadcast sounds absolutely horrible from my perspective. I don't know what anybody else is getting out there. Anybody else having an issue? Sidekick, you okay?
Sorry, I was on mute.
How's it sound now?
Yep, we're better at the moment. Yeah, oh, I don't know. Brandon. I don't know what is going on there. Honestly, I really don't know what's going on.
Yeah, because as soon as I muted it, it all went away.
How is it now, though?
Now you're good. Now I don't hear it. So maybe you haven't fixed it. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Well, we'll see how it goes here.
Yeah, we'll play with it.
Okay.
I was going to say it off the top of the show. I thought you were starting to play with auto-tune. Yeah. Starting to mix things up a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I'm over here mixing. That's right, yeah. Sir Mix-a-Lot over here. Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
Yo, it's Mike in the house.
Exactly, there you go.
I'm bringing you Sunday sports.
I think you do it better than I ever could. That's for darn sure. All right. Anyhow, that kind of messed up my entire intro. We're going to talk Pocono.
We're off the rails already, right?
Yeah, exactly. We're off the rails. We're off the outline. Yeah. It doesn't take much, folks, to get us off target. We're going to talk Pocono, which, you know, as I just pointed out, I think was a mess. And I think it was atrocious, the way it was handled. Chris Buescher ended up winning Pocono. And again, that's not even my issue. I have no problem with that. Chris Buescher did exactly the right thing. Good for him. I say congrats. There are some people out there, though, and I'm going to tell you, I came across a piece which I shared with both you guys, which we're going to talk about, which absolutely blew me away because the writer is talking out of both sides of their mouth. And it was just filled with hate. It was filled with hate. And frankly, I found it absolutely despicable that this article even got into got published anywhere because I think it was a disgrace. We're going to talk about that one. We're going to our second road course today. It's my favorite of the two. I like Watkins Glen. Of course, Watkins Glen is quite old, been around a long, long time. I think it's 100 years or more. But it's a wonderful place, and they've done terrific improvements. We happened to catch a little bit of the Xfinity race here yesterday, and it is looking very, very nice, very good. So it should be.
Well, and remember, they repaved it, last year, right?
They did. Well, if you remember, we had Mike Printup on our Frat House Sports Show last July, and he was telling us how they had done portions of the track up to that point, but that they were planning on doing this massive repave in the off season this year.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting pictures of it from Watkins Glen all through the wintertime and all through the off season, and amazing. You know, I remember him telling us back on our program in July last year. In fact, what I should have done was I should have pulled some clips from that for today. I should have gone back and done that. But I remember him telling us back then that the ridiculous amount of money that they had spent on that track up to that point. That was before the big repave that took place this past offseason. So I don't know what that cost was for the work that they just did. But I'll tell you something. Incredibly evident, and when you see it today, it really is attractive, and it looks terrific. We've been talking about Dale Jr. for the past couple of weeks. We're going to continue to talk a little bit about Dale Jr. as we're not going to see him until, at the very earliest at this point, maybe Michigan. That is the word now at this point. Jeff Gordon is running for him today at Watkins Glen, and will be again next week as well. At where are we going to be? Bristol. So we're going to talk a little bit about that one as well. Smoke got some bad financial news this past week. We'll talk about that one, albeit I'm not somewhat surprised by that. But I was a little bit taken back by some remarks by the King, Richard Petty. And we will talk about those as well. If anybody wants to jump in with us here, over the course of the next 90 minutes or so, please don't hesitate. 347-826-9964 is how you can get a hold of us here. 347-826-9964. Otherwise, you can leave us a message in our Blog Talk Radio chat room, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Frat House Mike. That's how you can get me on Twitter at Frat House Mike. Guys, I don't know what to say about Pocono. We talked about it, last week. Three out of four of the most recent races at Pocono have been affected by weather in one way or another. Sidekick, you and I were there a number of years ago in August. We know that the weather situation, particularly in the beginning of August, is volatile, it being there in the mountains. And in the summertime, obviously. It just seems to me NASCAR needs to sit back and figure out a better time to get Pocono into the schedule. That's the bottom line. And I think that solves the problem. Because last week, guys, I'm sorry, was a disaster. I mean, not only did it get delayed from Sunday to Monday, but then Monday it never started on time. And then Monday was ultimately shortened. It just seems to be something's got to be done. Any thoughts?
Well, I'm not sure where the best time to move it is, because it is in the mountains, so you're always going to have, tenuous weather. So I'm not sure, if there is an easy answer as far as that's concerned. But, I agree with you. It was kind of a joke the way it was handled this time. And I think we had brought up it actually happened the same way last year, correct?
I don't know if it was the same exact way. I'm trying to remember last August. I got to be honest with you, I don't
Well, wasn't the other Pocono race this year ran on Monday as well?
The other, yes, it was. It was this is the only venue. In fact, I was reading somewhere. In fact, is it this article here? I'll check this one article here that I've got. But if I'm not mistaken, I think it indicated this is the only venue, Pocono, where it has ever happened that both races were affected by weather and ultimately suspended, run on a different day. I mean, that's got to tell NASCAR something. I mean, seriously. You know. Sidekick, what are your thoughts?
Actually, surprisingly, I'm pretty much at a just leave it the way it is. The problem with NASCAR is weather is always a factor. And yes, I know for the past couple of years we've kind of had this trend here in the Northeast, especially when you talk about the Pocono races, where you know where we are getting kind of these strange storms that you know delay the race. Unfortunately, you know, I think that's just one of those things that you kind of have to deal with being a NASCAR fan. I mean, you go back to my first Daytona, 4 years ago? There was tornado, you know, it didn't run. No, I'm sorry, they did run it at night, and it finished, like, at 2 in the morning.
Right.
But, you know, but it got delayed. We didn't start that race until close to midnight. You know, it got started, it red flagged, there was tornado warnings, there was, you know, all sorts of crazy nightmare weather, you know. And for whatever reason, you know, especially in our region, we've seen some really weird weather patterns. You know what I mean? But unfortunately, you know, most people with short-term, you know, with their short-term memory remember, oh, well, this Pocono was rained out. Last year's Pocono got rained out, you know. But really, I guess if you go back and you look at the whole history at the track, you know, maybe there's more, you know, I guess sunny races than there were rainy races, you know. But like I said, I don't, you know, and we've also discussed about where, well, okay, if you move the Pocono races, where do you really move them? You know what I mean? They're already close together. You know, God forbid we shorten it up anymore. Why don't you just have Pocono back to back? You know. So I, you know.
See, it does seem to me that August is probably a more volatile, you know, late July and early August, maybe even into mid-August, is a more volatile time of year to have a race in a location like Pocono, it would seem to me. I recognize that there is always the opportunity for inclement weather. I recognize that. That's fine. But it seems to me that in that window that I'm talking about, it's much more favorable for inclement weather. Moving one of them to a spring race, April, May, or as I suggested last week, moving one of the Poconos into the Chase, and I can tell you right now where it makes the most sense to me, would be you go right now, the way the Chase schedule is for this year, we're going Chicago, New Hampshire. Then right there, bam, put Pocono in there, and then follow that up with Dover. Boom. Now you're in early October. I don't know if you're running into.
So which one are you taking out? Which one are you taking out?
Well,
New Hampshire?
No, you can keep New Hampshire. You can keep
New
Hampshire.
You have to remove one, though.
Well, I understand. So you just have to figure out, you'd have to take a look at one of them that you could juggle up into the spot for Pocono. I mean, that's all it would be a matter of.
Right.
I'm looking at it from the standpoint, too, of proximity. Look, it makes sense. New Hampshire, Pocono, New Hampshire, Pocono, Dover. Boom. Right there. Boom, boom, boom. Okay? And we're still not into the cold, cold, you know, fall, late fall weather. So by the time you get to that, we're already starting to swing west anyhow, right? We're going to Phoenix and places like that. Texas and things. That's where you're going when you start getting into the later chase races. So I don't know. It just seems to me it makes sense. Now, interestingly, I'm reading an article late last night. In my opinion, there potentially could be even bigger problems starting next year. The Pennsylvania 400, according to this one article from USA Today, the Pennsylvania 400 was scheduled for a 1:48 Eastern time start before a second sweep of showers ruined more than 2 hours of track drying. The race is scheduled to start at 3 p.m. next season, the latest for an event at a 2.5-mile triangular track with no lights. Well, you have the same circumstances occur next year. You're not even determining to try to get that race in. It's just not going to happen. Not with a 3 p.m. start.
Well, maybe they're building in the ability to move it up if there's bad weather. You know what I mean?
Well, for next, I thought next season they when they did their little media thing for when they released the schedule for next year, I thought they were trying to do the more consistent time where you didn't have races that were starting at 1 and some at 3 and some here, where they were trying to narrow it down where, you know, it's almost like, you know, Sunday, you know, football Sundays, you know, the games kick off at 1 o'clock.
Yeah. Trying to make it more
depending
kind of
on where
universal.
You're, you know, obviously depending on where you're at, you know, for us on the East Coast, it's 1 o'clock. You know what I mean? And I think that's what they were trying to do. You know, to be honest, you know what I'd like better than the times being good? How about when you're on a network, it's on the same channel every week? For crying out loud.
Well, of course, this week.
This week, we're on NBCSN.
Yeah.
We're on Fox Sports that week. We're on Fox Sports 1 the week.
Well, we're on USA this week now. You know that.
Well, that's
right?
What I said. You know, it's like.
You know, that's a four year exception though. So I get you. I mean, obviously, I mean that's. You know, they're accommodating the Olympic coverage, which, you know,
no,
I talked about it a little.
Yeah, but it's also been this way for a couple of years, especially with Fox. You know, you're on Fox proper. You're on Fox Sports 1. You're on,
Well, I mean, as far as the Olympic coverage goes, I talked a little bit about that on Saturday's show yesterday, and excuse me. The NBC, what NBC is doing, juggling as many as 8-9 different networks, is absolutely incredible. I don't know how they're keeping it all straight, honest to God. I mean, it's just they're almost virtually covering the Olympics minute to minute. I can't see where they're missing anything. I mean, they got table tennis covered.
I mean, I guess that's one selling point for NBC.
Yeah, but you shouldn't disrupt something you're paying a lot of money for over a course of several years
for one event.
And I think that's, you know, that's a little gray area, I guess.
Well, that was the point I was going to make. You know, that's kind of the yin and yang, you know. The yin being, well, you know, somebody like the Olympics, that's a selling point for them. You know, because, hey, we can get all the games on, you know, NBC's got, you know, 15 channels in their arsenal, and, you know, we can basically air every event live. But then, you know, the yang to that would be, you know, you got NASCAR or NFL, say, or, you know, some of these other, you know, other leagues where, you know, they're consistent, you know, it's multi-year deals where it's consistent, you know, a consistent time of the year. and you're bumping NASCAR now to put the Olympics on. Well, no, leave your annual, your most consistent customers on the channels that their fans are used to watching them on, and take your every 4 year events and throw them on USA or Here, There, and Everywhere else. You know what I mean? It's just a frustration for me because I like to tape the races so that, if I have time during the week, I can go back and kind of rewatch or scan through to try to, pick up things to, for the show when we talk about it. But you can't DVR it if it's on a different channel every damn week.
You know, it's funny because I actually find that, talk about, things that are less annoying. I mean, you just said, as far as Pocono goes, you're inclined to just say, hey, leave it as it is. Where I'm the one kind of ranting about it. As far as the coverage goes, I'm okay with it because, look, it's the Olympics, man. They only happen once every 4 years.
Hey, wait. You're the one on Thursdays calling for it to be canceled forever.
Well,
look. No,
I can. That's easily justified. I'm not happy with what the Olympics have become. But as far as covering them and whether there's an audience appeal for it, I recognize that there is, and therefore I think that that's just something for 2 weeks. As race fans, we have to be realistic about, look, it's not drawing. NASCAR is not going to draw what perhaps some of these Olympic events were going to draw. And what are they going to be showing on the mother network that perhaps maybe where our, well, I guess so. NASCAR has been on what? NBC SN, right? NBC SN is what they have been on.
They had a race.
It really hasn't been on
proper.
When was it on NBC proper? The first week.
I think the first week they were on NBC
Daytona.
Proper.
Yeah, when Daytona, the 4th of July.
Yeah, that was
but
a prime
that's been
time.
It.
That's why.
But that's been
that
it.
That was a prime. Yeah, that was a prime time. That's probably why that was on NBC. To be honest with you. But then they've gone to we've been on NBC SN. Too many letters strung together. I just like the consistency.
No, I hear you. I understand.
I don't want to, Sunday morning, I'm kind of getting going. We're doing the show. And then I got to go try and figure out what channel this damn race is on, which is kind of stupid coming from a person that covers races on Sunday mornings, that I don't know what channel the race is on. But it changes every damn week.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I understand.
I'm cool with the time changes because obviously you've got, you different time zones. You're out in California 1 week, you're in the Midwest, you're in Northeast, you're in the Southeast. So I can understand where, race times kind of will change. Also depends on whether you got track lighting, you don't have track lighting. Like, to your point about NASCAR moving the race time to 3 p.m. next season. Stupid. There's no lights at Pocono. You've got no shot. I mean, it basically says, look, if we don't start this race at 3, it's Monday.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because it takes them 3 hours to dry the track. Okay? So let's say you start the race at 3 o'clock. Okay, and half an hour later, weather moves in, you're at 3:30, rain comes in, rains for half an hour, you're at, you're now at 4, 3 hours to dry a track, you're at 7, as long as nothing else happens, now you're trying to squeeze a race in an hour, because it roughly gets dark here around 8 o'clock.
Yep.
Either Pocono needs to, needs to look at putting lighting in. We discussed
not
that.
Happening.
And we discussed that last week. Brandon explained kind of the physics behind why lighting wouldn't really work at Pocono.
Because it's flat.
They'd have to put in so many lights to get that track adequately lit for racing conditions that it would just not be feasible.
Yeah, it probably would be cost prohibitive. I mean, it's a 2.5 mile track, for God's sake.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think, if I remember correctly, Pocono is not one of those that's owned by an affiliate of NASCAR.
Correct. Correct.
No. I have to choose my words. Not owned by NASCAR, owned by an affiliate with ties to NASCAR.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Still owned by the France family somehow.
Exactly.
So, but, you know.
In the same article that I was referencing before that talked about the start times being moved to 3 next year, which poses an even more, a potentially bigger logistical issue for specifically for Pocono, one of the things that was pointed out, and I think this has to be taken into account, the number of recreational vehicles in the outflowing traffic jam on Sunday from Pocono and the dearth of them in the camper lot of Monday indicated that many fans were unable or unwilling to return on Monday. The result for these fans is lost money, a lost experience, and perhaps a diminished willingness to return. ESPN.com cited industry insiders as estimating that ticket renewals decline as much as 10% following rain events the previous season. Weather is something that NASCAR needs to be working on avoiding, in my opinion, guys, at all costs. At all costs. And in I guess my argument and my complaint about Pocono is it seems that they keep going back to this despite the fact we've got a recent history that shows races at this track at this time of year are getting postponed or delayed until future dates, period. The evidence is there. And yet, they continue to do it. That's my only argument on it. But
well,
Brandon, you had said earlier, you said that I can hear where you're coming from. You're somewhat incredulous as to whether it can be moved as well. But you did say that you thought that last week was handled badly. How would you have handled it? How do you think it could have been handled?
I don't know, but they had to have some inclination that they weren't going to have enough time to get that whole race in with the fog, unless the fog was not expected. You know what I mean? Because to me, they always say they don't want to start till they know they can run the whole race. Well, you didn't run the whole race. You got interrupted by fog. You know, I don't know. I don't know how.
Well, the announce team kind of alluded to it. NASCAR, when they talk about weather, they look at the weather radar. Fog does not come up on the radar.
Right.
And that's kind of what their argument or their reasoning behind it was, hey, we didn't know this was coming because you can't, it's not, maybe they need to look at how they do their weather and analysis. Maybe they need to be looking at, working with maybe the local weather or something, like an area weather forecaster where, you've got like eyes on the ground kind of thing where you can say, things like weird things like fog or picking up, winds, winds you don't necessarily see on radars. Not that winds necessarily affect it, but we have seen high wind races where, all this crap's blown on, and you kind of have to, alert, have the teams more alert. So that they know that there may be stuff on the track and, be a little bit more vigilant for that kind of stuff. You may potentially have more race cautions because crap's blowing on the track. So I'm not going to, I wouldn't necessarily ding NASCAR on that fog thing. It's one of those, how do you handle that kind of things?
Well, and the way it came in, when you look at the video, it's just incredible. I think it was actually Chris Buescher. His spotter asked him at one point, can you see down to turn two? And his response was, little bit. Of course, this guy was the race leader at that point, and I guess he doesn't want to say, I can't see a damn thing. Honestly, it really was intense. That was some intense fog that came in there and hung around. I mean, right up to the end. I mean, you weren't seeing anything. We're not even talking about rain. We're talking about fog, for God's sake. I don't know. We're not going to solve this problem, obviously, here today. But, with all of these conditions, obviously, as we pointed out, the beneficiary was Chris Buescher, who, I guess in some respects, it was good strategy. It was also probably a bit lucky. He happened to pit at a particular time, and by the time that they go to flag this race, where is he? He's sitting up front. And then ultimately we call the race. We have everybody come into pit road, and there we sit. And ultimately it's shortened. It was called, and that's the way it goes. So Chris Buescher gets his first NASCAR Sprint Cup win. Has some interesting effects on the standings, which we can talk about. I kind of felt bad for the guy. Here he is. He wins a big race like this. There's no pit road celebration or, victory lane. There's no victory lane at all. They're underneath in a shed where they award him the trophy, which, really, it's kind of a shame. I felt bad for the kid. But thoughts, guys, on Chris Buescher winning it? Because, the reverb coming back on me right now is just driving me nuts.
Well, I like it. I think it's cool. I like when somebody like that sneaks in, gets a good win. The only problem for Chris is he's not in the top 30. He needs to, get some help or, whatever he needs to do. I don't know if that team's affiliated with anybody or not, but he needs to get, enough to make sure he gets his, point status up to the top 30. I mean, that'd be such a waste, to pull something like that off and, then you not make it because of that.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see what exactly his number is. Oh, he's 31st.
I think he's 31st, right, yeah. He's not too far out, but he needs to make sure that he gets up there and can stay up there without a problem.
It's a conspiracy. NASCAR said Chris Buescher was going to win last week at Pocono. Dale Jr. will stay out for the rest of the season so that Chris Buescher will advance into the top 30 and then go on to win the chase.
You know what?
Well, they better put Chris Buescher in the 88 car then, because he ain't gonna do it in the car he drives. You know what I mean?
Sorry, I had to go.
Have him be the substitute.
Right.
Well,
I don't think that's gonna. I think you're going to see Junior back in the car at Michigan.
Yeah.
I think that's the way they've set this up.
He's only 6 points behind David Ragan.
Who's that, Junior?
No, Chris Buescher.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, 6 points, though, when you're finishing in the 30s all the time, that's tough to make up.
Yeah, but David Ragan's
exactly.
not exactly.
I know, but if Reagan's finishing 33rd and Buescher's finishing 34th, what's he making up? Actually, in that case, he loses one. Flip it. It's 1 point a position that far back. So what's
yeah.
he? He's got to beat him by five or six positions just
right.
to get.
He needs to.
Up
needs
there
to have
so.
A couple. He needs to get a couple
That's
good runs in and hope for David Ragan to DNF.
Nah, he drives. He drives. What does he drive? A Ford? Is that 34 a Ford team?
Butcher.
I think it is a Ford.
Yeah, I know,
so,
right?
Yeah,
he
it
needs
is.
To, he needs. To, they need to. Ford needs to dial up Roush Yates Racing engines and tell them to make sure they give that 34 car, you know, something they can deal with to at least get back for the next few weeks. Right. In other words, if you're giving them level C engines because they're a, you know, a level C team, let's kick them up to a B or an A for the next few weeks and make sure we get this Ford in the chase. You know, that's what's got to happen. Maybe even a little, you know, technical assistance if they have an alliance with somebody. I don't know if they do or not. I'm not sure if Front Row does or not. I think that's Front Row Motorsports, right?
Yes.
Who?
Yeah, it might. They might have some loose affiliation with Roush. I don't know.
Roush, because
Penske has the Wood Brothers, so I don't think they have anything with Front Row. So, you know, whatever the case may be, I guarantee you the biggest driving force behind it's going to be Ford because they want the car in the chase.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Good point. Great point. Let me ask you this, Brandon. Do you think that you'll see that over the course of the next five races?
What, that car run a little better? Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how good of a road course driver Buescher is, so I don't know if it'll be too evident.
He already said he's not looking forward to it.
Yeah. And Bristol's not about horsepower. It's more about your short track driving ability for the most part. So I wouldn't say it there. But when we get to Michigan, if that 34 car seems to have a little bit more pep in its step, that's definitely a result of a better engine.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's where you'll see it.
But isn't this kind of the boost that Front Row needed?
Yeah,
you know,
because
they were talking about during the coverage, you know, teams without, you know, with the longest run without a win, and, you know, Front Row was the longest, you know, 198 races or something like that. But with this win now and the impetus of wins to get into the chase, do you think that positively affects that team now? Because, A, they've got to win. So they know, you know, while it was a weather-shortened race, you know, you get that taste. But then also, you have the potential for the manufacturer to come in and say, hey, they won a race. So they're, if we can get them in the top 30, they'll be eligible for a chase position. Can we siphon, or can we, you know, give them some intel? Can we, you know, what can we do for them so that the next 5 to 6 races, you know, they've got better equipment so that they can make, you know, a run trying to get in the top 30 and let's get this kid in the chase.
I couldn't agree more.
Kind of why you have a manufacturer affiliation?
You would think, right?
You know, because you look at Toyota. Toyota does, you know.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Hendrick or Chevy, we know, is really dominated by Hendrick. Hendrick pulls all the strings for Chevy. You know, and that's kind of why Tony's leaving Chevy. You know, Stuart Haas is leaving Chevy and going to Ford. You know what I mean? So, you know, given what, you know, them, you know, Ford swinging Stuart Haas away and, you know, saying, hey, we're going to give you all top-tier equipment. We're going to, you know, you're going to work with Roush, directly with Roush. You guys are going to be building your own car. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. You know, I would think with that kind of mindset and that environment that Ford probably would go to Front Row and say, hey, you know, what do you guys need? What can we do for you? Obviously, you know, it's not a blank check. We're not going to give you the moon. You know, let's be realistic, but, you know, what can we do to help you guys out in the short term to get you guys into the chase?
Yeah, you know, I hear you.
You know, and like Christian Colley says about, you know, the small teams and supporting small teams, this would be a great story.
Absolutely.
If it was publicized that, you know, Ford did go down to front row and say, hey, you know, love you guys got the win. What can we do to help you out? You know, we know you're a small team. What can we do to help you guys get into the chase this season?
I agree with you. I agree with you, Sidekick. I think that that would be – I think that's outstanding. Agreed. Agreed. And, you know, to everybody that I know as a race fan, for the most part, the fact that Buescher won on Monday was greeted warmly. Nobody really spoke negatively about it. In fact, you heard a lot of vocal fist pumping sort of thing.
I mean, even drivers.
That was the general reaction.
Congratulating him.
Exactly. And look, as I pointed out,
kid, you know, you got your first win. Well, you know, your first Sprint Cup win. Welcome to the club.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And as I pointed out, look, a lot of it was happenstance. A lot of it was circumstance. Being in the right place at the right time sort of thing. Having to, you know, use all the cliches you want. You know, hey, the chips fell right where they were supposed to fall. All right, all that, that's fine.
Any given Monday.
It happens. Exactly. It happens. And there it is. And he happened to be the beneficiary of it. Which is why I sent this article over to you guys yesterday, I guess.
Oh, I can't wait.
Which is why... And I'm going to call this guy out by name. This yutz, this moron, Brian Thornsburg, over at FanSided. Now, folks, you got to hear some of the tenor of his writing in this ridiculously disgusting piece. Headlined, Chris Buescher exemplifies why the chase is broken. It's no secret that NASCAR fans have waited years to see a first-time winner in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. While Chris Buescher fits the bill, his win also revealed a flaw in the current chase format. Oh, okay. So far already, right from the very first, we're going to pat him on the back, and then we're going to slap him across the face. Honest to God, I can't believe it. The last time that NASCAR saw a first-time winner was in 2014 when A.J. Allmendinger and Alec Almirola both won races and went to the chase as a result of those wins. Almirola also won a weather-shortened race, and Allmendinger won on a road course. Prior to 2014, fans saw David Reagan, Reagan Smith, and Trevor Bayne all win races but not go to the chase. Fans also saw a first-time winner in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series was in 2009 when Joey Logano won a rain-shortened race. Yeah, I love how he keeps bringing up the circumstances. You know, rain-shortened race. With Joe Gibbs Racing. While Logano's win was an impressive one, especially with how he executed his team's strategy to perfection and was able to stay out front, it wasn't enough to earn him a spot in the chase that year. Believe it or not, Logano missed the NASCAR chase in 2009 was a good thing. Sure, Logano did get the surprise win and established himself as a legitimate threat in the Sprint Cup Series, but he didn't have the consistency to deserve a spot in that year's chase. That's a judgment call, is it not, guys? Unfortunately for fans, NASCAR threw out the need for consistency and a legitimate playoff system when they created the new chase format in 2014. The rest of this article goes on to indicate, for the most part, and I might be able to pull out pieces of it here and there. I'm not going to sit here and read the whole damn piece on air. I might be able to pull out a line or two here or there as I continue to stand through it. But basically goes on to indicate that the current chase format right now is flawed because it does not reward consistency. And you can have, you know, dark horses like Chris Buescher win. And Chris Buescher winning is the worst thing in the world for NASCAR. Guys, I couldn't believe the tone of this article. I was disgusted by it. Go ahead, Sidekick.
Well, so many things. I wanted to call out one paragraph in this. Where he says, quote, Yes, instead of rewarding consistency, which used to determine playoff spots for a multitude of mainstream sports, NASCAR decided to declare that one win and a top 30 finish in points will guarantee you a spot in that year's playoffs. Not only does that give a chase berth to any driver that ends up in the right place at the right time at the end of the day, it also robs spots from drivers who have been consistent. End quote. Okay, first of all, you know, we just alluded to the fact that Chris Buescher may not get into the chase. You know what I mean? Because he's not in the top 30. The other thing is, you know, when he's sitting here talking about, you know, mainstream sports teams, you know, it's consistency, it gets them into the playoffs. Well, what type, you know, you're talking about consistency. Yeah, because they're wins. You know, the New England Patriots rack up 13 wins in a season. Yeah, they get to go to the playoffs. You know, so, you know, when you're talking about NASCAR, it's a lot. NASCAR's not like a lot of these other leagues because you have 40 to 44 teams every week vying for a win. There's only 26 wins that you can get. You know what I mean? So, you know, I don't know if I agree with that argument. And then he, you know, then he goes on to talk about, you know, that, you know, with the consistency of, say, football. We sit here and we always talk about, on any given Sunday, a team can steal a win from another team. You clearly know the other team's the better team, but a team gets lucky. You know, I'm
trying to,
you know,
I'm trying to find that line. Psychic, I agree with you. I'm trying to find that one line he had where he made the comparison to the NFL. Because when I read that one, I actually said that he was dead wrong on that, that it was the opposite. He had it completely asked backwards.
Exactly.
The comparison was wrong. In fact, in my opinion, what NASCAR has done is by moving the chase and this quote-unquote playoff in the direction they have, they've actually made it more like the NFL. It's more competitive, in my opinion. Not less rewarding as he's trying to contend. So, the whole thing, just I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that somebody would sit down and write a piece like this, where on one hand, I mean, right from the very beginning, hey, I'm going to pat Chris Buescher on the back, and at the same time, I'm going to tell him why he's a piece of crap. What?
Yeah.
Who sits down and does that? Honest to God.
Well,
and
you know,
when it comes right down to it, psychic, you know what it did? It just reminded me. I hate to paint with a broad brush, but this guy just smacks to me of that old school NASCAR fan that we all know out there, that we have to encounter frequently, that refuse to look forward and believe that it's the 21st century.
Right. Well, and, you know, when we talk about the chase, and we've joked about non-winners making it to the – yeah, we've argued the other side of the spectrum about the Ryan Newmans who can't get a win, but yet they're in the chase. You know, if the emphasis is on wins, why the hell is Ryan Newman in the chase? Yeah, we talk about that every year. But, you know, you got to go back and look at the impetus for the chase. You know, we had from 2006 to 2010, Jimmy Johnson win back-to-back-to-back-to-back championships. All right? And then, you know, they started playing around with this race, you know, throwing the wins in there, you know, to mix things up, you know, so that we don't have these back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back winners. You know, because, you know, part of the problem was you have someone that goes through the season, leads all the points,
And then all of a sudden, you know, three quarters of the way through the season, he's already the preordained winner. And people tune out, and especially once football started. So, you know, the chase was meant to kind of reset the field and have a playoff run where people got interested again and didn't check out at the end of the season. So, you know, I don't know. NASCAR is just a different kind of sport than the typical major leagues that you talk about. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You know,
Let me get Brendan. Brendan, did you get a chance to read this article?
Yeah, you know what? I think the guy's an idiot, like you said. To knock Chris Buescher in any way for this, I mean, this is why, you know, they sell T-shirts for all the drivers, because they all have fans. They may not all have, you know, a legion of fans like Junior and Kyle Busch and Jimmy Johnson, whatever. But, you know, that's why, you know, these smaller guys bring people to the track, too. You know, and the fact that they're out there, as kind of like Sidekick pointed out with the Any Given Sunday thing, you know, it's cool to see one of them grab a win when, even if there is, you know, circumstances. He didn't do anything outside the rules. He didn't do anything, substandard to pull off the win here. He didn't fail post-race qualifying after winning the race,
bingo,
like we've seen before. So, I mean, you know, give the guy a break. You know, this is how, you know, a team who made a smart call, you know, stayed on the track, you know, at the right time, you know, that's how they won a race. That's happened over the years. I mean, many times Darrell Waltrip won a race on fuel mileage or something way back when. Nobody gave it any second thought. His car wasn't the best car that day, but he found a way to, you know, win a race another way. That's all we have here. And anybody who writes an article like that is not a true fan.
It's NASCAR's equivalent of the Hail Mary.
Yeah. So, yeah. Exactly. That's a good way of saying it. Sidekick, it's a last-ditch effort, you know, for somebody else to try to sneak in a win. And you know what? It's not even a sneak. He earned it. He was there. His car was good enough. He was in front.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Well, there you go. Brian Thornsberg, you just got called out. Yeah, I mean, geez. Brandon just said you're not even a true fan. I love
it. That's the way I would look at it. I'm sorry.
I love it.
any true NASCAR fan is going to stand up and applaud when you see, you know, that. Even if it's not your favorite driver, your favorite manufacturer, who cares? It's somebody different who actually won the race. You know?
You know, funny because I read this piece yesterday afternoon, and I'm getting angrier and angrier as I read it. I looked the guy up. I actually found him. And I thought to myself, you know what? I can't do it. I can't have him on the show because I'm just going to rip him. I'm going to rip him, and it's going to get nasty. So I thought better than to invite him onto the program. But
I think it would have been a 3-on-1 beatdown.
Probably. Yeah. Probably about right there. So I guess.
But I'll be honest, though. I would have liked the debate and to see more why he thinks that way. You know what I mean? I mean, you read the article and it, you know, it's his thoughts and, you know, and everything, but, you know, at the same time, you know, it'd be interesting to see him actually, you know, sit here and talk when you have somebody countering, you know, bringing counter arguments and, you know, see how he, you know, handles his defense. If he, you know, if he just kind of crumbles, and it was like, oh, okay, you're just writing, you know, a little piece that, you know, really no merit. Or if he's actually able to back it up and say, well, you know, I've got the, you know, here, this, that, that's that. You know, it can make, you know, and can legitimately stand on his feet in a debate about it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm willing to make the judgment. I'll go out on the limb. I said it earlier, and I'll say it again. I think what we would find is that Mr. Thornsberg is, as I pointed out, one of these dyed-in-the-wool, old-school NASCAR folks that want to sit there and say, this is my sport, you're not changing my sport, gosh darn it, why are you messing with my sport, you know, and refuse to come
into the new era. That's what you would find. You know, they're destroying the sport, all that kind of stuff. That's what you would hear from Mr. Thornsberg. That's my guess. But, hey, Mr. Thornsberg, if you would like to, are more than happy. We'd be more than happy to have you on the air. You can jump in with us anytime. We're generally here Sunday mornings, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Yes, Frat House Mike, Sidekick, and Brandon. You can give us a call, 347-826-9964. We'd love to debate it with you. All right, anyhow. Real quick, jump over to Dale Jr. Guys, word came out he's not going to race right through Bristol next week, so earliest we may see him, Michigan. However, there have obviously been sightings. I believe he is at Watkins Glen this week. There were pictures of he and Jeff Gordon together. There were appearances by him. He apparently dispelled any rumors that, in fact, he might retire. Brandon, thoughts on Dale Jr.'s comments this week?
Well, if he's not capable of running this week, it obviously, you know, you got a week off next week, and then Bristol, which is a high G-force racetrack because of the configuration. So you don't want to come back there. You know, you're going really fast into a tight turn, and, you know, the sudden stops at Bristol are bad, and that's the kind of thing that can mess with your equilibrium to begin with. So I think what they did was smart. Now, you know, he essentially got three more weeks to get, you know, his head right, essentially, from the concussion symptoms. And if he's good to go, you know, what a better place for him to try to win than Michigan, where he's done really good. You know, I like it personally. I think it's a good call all the way around. I'm dying to watch Jeff Gordon today at the road course, because he's always been a very good road course racer. He's starting 21st, which is a little far back for a road course, but
yeah,
you know, I still like it.
He's won here four times. There's only one person that's won here more than he, and that is Tony Stewart, actually, who has won five times at Watkins Glen. Jeff Gordon four times. Go ahead.
I was going to say, didn't I see that none of the Hendricks are in the top 10?
I think that's correct.
They're all kind of in the back.
I've got qualifying.
Hashtag fantasy hits.
Oh, okay. All right, there's a fantasy hit.
JGR's got like three in the top five again.
Yeah.
Exactly. I will be interested to hear the fantasy selections, because if what you're alluding to is what I think you're alluding to, don't look for any Hendrick vehicles on the fantasy team. That would be my suspicion. Because, look, bottom line is this, and we can talk about Watkins Glen.
Yeah.
Watkins Glen, this is a track position course, guys. I mean, look, let's get it straight, right? I mean, it's a road course, so it's track position. It's all about track position. If you are not, and historically speaking, statistically speaking, winners at this track, 94% come out of the top 15. If you are 16 or back, forget it. You're not going to win. 94% come in the top 15. 64% come in the top five at Watkins Glen. That's just because of the type it's a road course. That's the type of thing we're running here.
Yeah. Well, it's tight passing.
Exactly.
It's not easy. You know, we talk about, you know, tracks like Bristol where it's not, you know, it's hard to pass and stuff like that. It's hard to pass at Bristol because you got 40 cars jammed into that short little track. It's hard to get around people. You know, obviously, you know, road course is more stretched out, but, you know, you're turning left, you're turning right. There's, you know, not long straightaways. So, you know, it's a little bit harder to pass there. So, you know, you've got to pick where you're wanting to go. Honestly, a lot of positions get picked up on pit road.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, or you could ruin your day on pit road.
We've seen it many times. We've seen it many times right here at the Glen. Brandon, before I jump off the Dale issue, let me ask you one quick question. Coming back at Michigan, at that point, there's only three races left. You got Michigan, you got Darlington, you got Richmond. You got three races remaining before the chase. A lot of pressure at that point then on Junior at that point.
Well, Michigan's a good track for him to win at. He runs well at Richmond, the last one as well. You know, I whether he makes it or not, at least he has a legit shot. You know, Darlington is, you know, that can go anyway. I've seen him run good there and not run good there. So, you know, it just depends how they're doing, I guess, at that particular track that week. But Michigan certainly his best shot. I don't know if
Willie,
he's going to put pressure on him. I mean, I think at that point, you know, you're coming back from injury. You're not going to make it on points because he's only a few out of it now, but he's going to lose two races more worth. So, you know, that's not going to happen. So I don't know why anybody would put pressure on him when he's coming back from an injury. You know, that would be foolish. You don't want to add any undue stress that you don't have to.
Yeah, but what about all right, maybe nobody else would, but I mean, look, you're a driver. You're a competitor. You're going to put the stress on yourself, aren't you?
Well, maybe not. Maybe he's just going to go out there and, you know, take it the best he can. I mean, Tony Stewart probably didn't have a whole lot of stress on him when he came out, pulled the win off at Sonoma, because, you know, nobody was even sure he'd even come up with a win, you know? So that same kind of, you know, thought process can follow through for Junior. Junior's missed a bunch of races now, you know, so maybe they're not thinking he's going to make it. So maybe it'll be easier to sneak in. I mean, he's got the top 30 thing licked for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not going to be an issue.
Willing to step out on a ledge and do a predict, or you want to wait on that until after Michigan or Michigan?
If he's going to win at Michigan, let's see if he actually gets
into
the car
if
first.
If he gets into the chase.
If he gets into the chase. Well, it's clearly it's going to come down to if he wins. I'll wait and see what he looks like in practice and qualifying at Michigan. If he looks good like he normally does there, yeah, I'd probably say he got a shot at winning that.
All right,
if he wins, he's in. We know that.
Gotcha. All right. Well, we'll give you some time then on that one.
He would still technically need a waiver then, correct?
No.
I don't think so, no. Why would he?
No, he's good. He didn't miss any races he qualified for, and he's in the top 30 naturally.
That's right. They changed the rules.
So he's good,
didn't they?
He don't even need a waiver.
That's right.
If you look at the points right now, he's not that far out of making it on points still, believe it or not. But unfortunately, with them not racing for two more races, it's going to kill him, totally. Like, he wouldn't be able to make that up in three because he's going to lose two more worth. I mean, unless he goes, like, second, and all the guys right in front of him have horrible days, there's probably no chance of him making it on points. Let's put it that way. As soon as I say that, then they'll figure out a way, you know?
Gotcha. All right, before we... Well, we got some time here. We got a couple of minutes. Let me get into this. I don't know. I might just be sounding like I did with the previous article here. I got to bring up these comments from Richard Petty. And look, we all have respect for the King, just because of his longevity and track record and all of his accomplishments. However, apparently he had some comments with regard to, I guess, what could be known as, Brian France is what, the president, I guess, technically, or chairman and CEO of NASCAR. One could say, if we were to make the analogy, he is, for all intent and purpose, the commissioner of NASCAR.
He's Roger.
Exactly right. Apparently, in a lengthy interview that Petty did with Auto Week one of the things that came up was, in fact, NASCAR and Brian France in particular. When asked if it matters that Brian that France works more behind the scenes, Petty responded, quote, "The question from owners is, who's running NASCAR? I think everyone questions, where does the buck stop? His granddad and dad were there every race weekend. They looked at it like, we have to take care of the racers, but we have to take care of the fans, too. I think Brian looks at it like, what can we do to expand NASCAR? Not with the race cars, but with all the electronic crap and the social media stuff that's going on. That's not bad because we need to generate new fans. But I don't know if racing, pure racing by itself, would generate that many new fans. Brian's probably doing what he needs to do while we're over in the garage wondering if he's even paying attention to the racing. We know what we're after, but we don't know what he's after." All right, guys, I'm going to tell you right now. Richard Petty's a curmudgeon. He doesn't understand the concept of 21st century business, sports business. I am not about to sit here and say that Brian France is the greatest CEO and chairman that NASCAR could possibly have. I'm not going to pretend that. But if, in fact, Brian France is working behind the scenes, doing some of these things that Richard Petty refers to as electronic crap in order to promote the sport, I've got no problem with it. That's exactly, in my opinion, what Brian France should be doing in 21st century sports promotion. Richard Petty sounds like a friend to our buddy who wrote the other article, Mr. Thornburg, right? Whatever it was, if that was what his name was. They're coming from the same mold here. I wanna respect what Richard Petty said, but I have a little trouble with it. Go ahead, weigh in.
Well, he is old school, Mike. That's Richard Petty.
Honestly,
that's what he's gonna
do. I got it.
So,
but why flaunt it?
Well, maybe he just wants
you're an owner.
As an owner, he just wants a clear cut, leader in charge, and the way it is right now. In his eyes, there is no clear-cut leader of NASCAR. In other words, that he's too much behind the scenes. Maybe he would – back in the old days, when Bill France ran it, there was another guy named Mike something, the big guy with a mustache. He was kind of the – yeah, Mike Helton. He was the president and out in front of everything. I don't think he's still involved anymore. I think Helton's retired.
No, Mike Helton.
Yeah.
He's a vice
he's
president.
Not, yeah, but he's not like the guy who they're interviewing every week anymore. Like they used.
You see him? He's visible enough.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. The TV would always go to him if they had questions about policies or procedures, stuff like that. And I don't know. Maybe he's just not as vocal as he used to be. But I don't know.
Yeah, he's. Mike Helton's still the vice chairman, NASCAR.
Right.
He replaced
right.
Bill France Jr. in November 2000 as the company's third president.
Oh, okay. He's visual enough. You see him enough. He's been interviewed on Fox down there on pit road and things like that during pre-race and stuff. Mike Helton, and I'm trying to remember the other guy who's up there with him, Steve something, I want to say. Trying to remember who.
I will say... This season, it has seemed like he hasn't been as present as he has in years past.
Sometimes that's good, isn't it? We don't always want to see Roger Goodell.
Right. Well, and I think part of it was the reason you saw Mike Helton the past few years so much, because we're talking about Kyle Busch breaking his leg and the constant media questions about Kyle Busch getting a waiver and doing all that stuff. We saw a lot of Mike Helton when Tony Stewart had the accident up at Canandaigua. We saw a lot of Mike Helton when Tony Stewart broke his leg.
You know what I mean? There hasn't really been a big controversy this season, per se. You know, we saw him a lot with the Kyle Busch, with the Kurt Busch thing, with the whole thing with that crazy ex-girlfriend of his.
Yeah.
Looney Tune. You know what I mean? And I guess maybe because there hasn't really been a large-scale controversy going on this season, other than the simple annoying, stop changing the rules every week, guys.
Yeah.
He hasn't had to really be out there being a spokesperson for NASCAR talking about, you know, this is what we're going to do about Tony Stewart. This is what we're doing about Kurt Busch. This is, you know what I mean? And maybe that's why we just haven't really seen him as much this season.
Well, and look, let's get this one straight. We all know this sitting here that, you know, Brian France is a bit of a lightning rod, like most commissioners are. You know, most people don't like the commissioner, period. And Brian France has a good deal of detractors, particularly vocal ones. So, listen, it might all be part of a strategy. France saying, look, you know, keep me out of the limelight. Keep me out of the spotlight. I don't need to be seen because it only creates ire amongst certain fan bases. So leave it alone. Run the races. Let's put on the best product we possibly can. Let's promote it the best we possibly can. And, I'll be doing whatever. Look, I'm not defending him because I don't know what the hell Brian France does. I can't speak to what his daily activities and habits are. I have no idea. I've heard rumors, but a lot of times those rumors are spurred by the naysayers who want to spread negative stuff about an individual. So, you know, I don't know. I can't speak to Brian France. I don't know. Anytime I've ever seen him, he seems okay. You know, there are some, we've sat here and disagreed with a lot of different things that NASCAR as a unit, as an organization does, but that doesn't necessarily, you know, it doesn't exactly equate to the same degree, I suppose, as our ire over the past couple of years has been directed at Roger Goodell, right? Not the same. Roger Goodell, there have been times, all of us at different times, have sat here and said, that guy is just
the
either
devil.
He's flat out evil, or he's an idiot, or he's a moron, or whatever. You know, but I can't say the same about Brian France. I don't know that. I don't have anything to specifically point to. So, but I don't know. I just kind of, I recognize, hey, Richard Petty, what did I say? He's 90, I think, right? Isn't he 90?
Yeah. Well, okay. You know, maybe this is a broad generalization. Maybe it isn't. And, you know, NASCAR fans can call me out like we call out reporters for fan-sided. But I don't know if I'd be taking business advice from Richard Petty. Richard Petty Motorsports doesn't look like the most viable business model right now. Or in recent history.
Petty Enterprises, as it used to be called back in the day, hasn't been viable since Richard Petty himself retired. They had one decent driver named Bobby Hamilton who won a few races for him. John Andretti did a couple too, but nothing. They had no other drivers since Petty. I mean, Amarola shows flashes, but he never seems to get any momentum. So it's just like, you know.
Well, but I mean,
their best chance to win was when they had the Australian guy who went back to Australia in the car.
Ambrose.
Yeah, Ambrose. When they had Ambrose. At least he had a shot at winning a road course, as he put on a heck of a show anyway.
He sure did. Talk about that road course. This would have been one of his. This was one of his bailiwicks right here today.
You got it.
Yeah. I mean, how many times
they
we saw the duel?
Put on a show like
I was
going to
say
ago,
there were a couple of duels between Ambrose and a number of them out there. I'm remembering that one with Kyle Busch. He and Kyle Busch going back and forth through the turns. Holy smokes!
You know, that ending of that Watkins Glen race with Allmendinger, that put Allmendinger in the chase that one year, was just awesome.
Yep.
Either one deserved it. It was just those last few laps were probably the best racing you'd seen in 10 years in NASCAR.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Real quick, before we get into fantasy picks and eat my dust and that sort of thing, our picks for today's race. Thoughts on Watkins Glen. Like I said, of the two road courses, it's my favorite. I'm looking forward to it. Carl Edwards on the pole here. And as Brandon pointed out, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 Toyotas in the top six. Carl Edwards on the pole. Kyle Larson, Tony Stewart, as I pointed out, five-time winner here. Coming in at number three, Matt Kenseth. Kyle Busch at number five. Denny Hamlin, number six. Martin Truex ran very, very well in practice. We have seen Martin Truex run well on road courses in the past, guys, although he has not won at Watkins Glen. I don't think he's won at Sonoma either, but he's a good road course runner. Had very, very good practice times this past week, but ended up 14th in the starting lineup. Any thoughts on an Allmendinger? Let me throw Allmendinger in there as well, because we're talking about road course drivers coming in at number nine. We do have we've got a Barsed shout out
fighting.
For all the said heads out there, Barsed is in the lineup tonight, 37th. Go ahead, guys. Any initial thoughts on this? Carl Edwards doesn't strike me as a road course driver. I don't know.
Carl Edwards has done okay on road courses. Kyle Busch has done good on road courses. Obviously, he's won. But I think the guy, and I'm giving away my eat my dust, but I'll whatever. If you want to know what I think, I think that Tony Stewart, starting from three, is the guy to watch today. And I'll tell you why. I was watching practice the other night on Friday night on DVR, and old Tony Stewart showed up. He was in the pits chewing Kyle Larson a new butthole because of something he did on the track. And he had that intense look in his eye as he was sitting there telling the youngster what he was doing wrong on the track.
That was this week. I love it.
I have it on the DVR. If you want, I can probably look for it. They don't show too much of Tony's face, but all you see is Kyle Larson look at him, and all he's saying is, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. You can tell if he's even saying that. He has this big wide eye look like, you know, I'm not quite sure what I'm getting, you know, what how to handle
thank
this.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Exactly.
He's just been dressed down by the principal.
Yep, and his crew chief's just sitting there shaking his head right next to him the whole time. So, you know what? If Tony Stewart's in the pits doing that, to me, that means he's ready to race Sunday. And you know, the fact you pointed out he's won the most there, he just won, you know, the other road course a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, I'm going with Tony Stewart today. I think Tony Stewart's going to be a man possessed. I think he likes this track better than he likes Sonoma, and he just won Sonoma. So, you know, I think if they got any kind of car, you know, look out. I think the competition's in for a long day of seeing that 14. You know, if not up front, you know, one of the top two or three for sure.
Sonoma is very scenic. It's a fun place to look at. There's no trees in certain areas of it. There's no trees. You know, it's coming down to
technical road course. In other words, it's slower, more tight turns. Where Watkins Glen, you carry a lot more speed through some of the turns. And I think Tony's better at that.
I like Watkins Glen a lot more. I don't know than Sonoma. I really do. I just to me, there's you know, the history and just the look of it, I like Watkins Glen a lot more than Sonoma.
Sonoma to me just smacks California and Hollywood and all the other crap.
It's scenic. It's scenic, though. It's scenic. You know, you got good sight lines for television, for sure. But thoughts on it? Thoughts on it, though, real quick, Sidekick, on Watkins Glen, before, but without giving anything away with regard to picks or anything?
Not really. I mean, yeah, this is an interesting track because basically this is one of the tracks where you run it, you kind of run it backwards. As far as your pit stops and everything go. So, that's from a, you know, from a, I guess a technical racing perspective. But you know, I'm excited to see Tony up front, you know, or up towards the front, you know, not happy to see all the JGR guys up there, but oh well, Tony will get them fixed. So,
I'll tell you,
had no issue with Hamlin at Sonoma there on that last lap, if you recall.
Yeah.
Little chrome bumper took care of that number 11.
You got it.
Yep. As Brandon pointed out, watch 18, starting out of the 5 spot there. Kyle has won here twice before and is a good road course driver.
How'd you like to see that finish? 18 and 14. Bumping each other around the track, not afraid to take each other out.
That actually would be great. You're right.
Well,
that would be very,
I'm
very good.
I'm going to throw one more in the mix with you.
Go ahead.
42.
Well, Kyle Larson was dressed down a bit, so he's going to have to behave, I bet.
I was going to say the 47. I was going to say the 47.
So, yeah.
How about the 47?
Yeah, AJ Allmendinger, he put on, him and Ambrose, as we were talking about, he came out victorious on that, as our Facebook friend Liz pointed out in the chat room there in that great race that we were talking about earlier. So yeah, he could definitely be a factor. You know, you don't know how it's going to play out, though. We've seen different strategies. They try to race this race backwards, as they say. In other words, when they have enough to get, you know, enough when they can pit and have enough gas to go to the next stop, you know, so sometimes you see a little different stuff, and depending how the cautions fall, you know, with that strategy, sometimes you get different people out front at different times. So
yeah, and this is probably this is probably one of those we'll be talking about, one of those gas mileage races.
Yep.
You know, if it stays green,
caution caught somebody at the wrong time kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You could potentially, you know, start watching some of the, you know, top five all of a sudden, you know, they're going around the corners talking about, I'm losing it. And then you're out of gas. Yeah, I'm sure that has to be the worst feeling in the world, to be hitting some of them corners at Watkins Glen and there not being enough fuel, and the, you know, the car kind of sputters, you know. That must be the worst feeling, knowing that there's, you know, 35 to 40 cars behind you and you're sputtering.
Well, I remember that happening to somebody. I'm trying to remember who. I want to say it was Clint Boyer recently, in one of the years recently. I remember him coming through. It might have been right around by the bus stop, and he lost it. I mean, there no fuel, no power, and just ended up having to somehow or another get himself off to the side. But anyhow, all right. Well, look, let's do this. Let's since we only have a couple of minutes here remaining, let's get around here and get into a little bit of fantasy chat for a second and get some fantasy going. And hold on here, Sidekick. Let me just pull, I don't have the most recent standings up. What did I do here? Where's my oh, there we go. Where are the most recent standings? Let me take a look at these real quick. Four-time winner, Daytona Cementheads currently leads all. And then we've got Speed Demon in number two. B. Hain Destroyers coming in at number three. And Texas Ham coming in at number four. And then the Race Trim Fantasy Team comes in at number five. Go ahead there, Sidekick. New points leader this past week, by the way, my friend.
Yeah, I noticed. I dropped all the way to third.
Yep. Yep.
On that.
Oh, well. I'm still getting in the chase.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think you have to worry about it.
So this week, I'm running Joey Logano, Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson, Tony Stewart, Casey Mears. I'm going with Tony Stewart and Chevy for the win. Eat my dust. I'm going with Tony Stewart for the win.
Wow. And in your fantasy team there, if I'm not mistaken, what do you got? You got three in the top five starting position? You got Kyle Larson. Tony Stewart.
Joey's a little farther back. Hang on.
Kyle Larson's starting at number two.
Yep.
Tony's three. Kyle's five.
Joey is seven.
Yeah, you got three in the top five. Wow. That's pretty good.
Four in the top ten.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's some pretty good maneuvering there. I know I'm not changing my team at all. I haven't moved anybody off my team in probably about 4 weeks. Liz, loyal listener Liz, let's see what she said here. My picks. Number 18, Kyle Busch. Number 24, Chase Elliott. Number 14, Tony Stewart. Number 48, Jimmy Johnson. And 47, Allmendinger. Of course, Dinger to win. There you go. Those are loyal listener Liz's picks. Sidekick's got Tony Stewart to win the race today. NASCAR John going with Denny Hamlin. Brandon, you want to repeat yours again?
Yeah, I'm going with Tony Stewart as well. I'm not changing. I had him bookmarked before you said anything about him being the most winning. As soon as I saw him, you know, chewing out Kyle Larson, I was on board.
Yeah, and in the top five, right?
And well, yeah, that don't hurt either.
That doesn't hurt. Exactly right. Just to let everybody know, I always make my pick the night before, so I sit waiting for everyone to make their picks. Folks, we got a trifecta here in the Frat House Sports Garage. I am going with Tony Stewart to win today. All three of the mechanics here in the Frat House Sports Garage are going with Tony Stewart.
Wait. I'm a driver. I don't get my hands dirty.
Nah.
And as you heard, our loyal listener, Liz, going with the Dinger for the win today at the Glen. This should be a fun race. 2:30 this afternoon. And again, it's on USA today, right? USA?
Yep, USA Network.
Network, because of the
2:42 on DirecTV, if anybody out there is wondering. Don't know what it is on other stuff, but it's 2:42 on DirecTV.
Nice. Look at there. We bring you everything here. All right, good. Great program today, guys. Thank you very much. Somehow or another, we got through all the echoing and the nonsense. It goes on and off.
Well, there was one point where Frat House Mike, every other word you were saying sounded garbled, and then all of a sudden it's like a switch clicked, or you maybe fiddled with your mic cable, and you were perfect the rest of the way. So, who knows?
What's the Eat My Dust standings?
Real quick.
I got those. Real quick, I can give you those. Eat My Dust standings right now. Sidekick, you are leading 6:45. NASCAR John 6:20. Brandon 5:70. I'm coming in at 5:49 because I got slammed last week after winning the week before. And loyal listener Liz at 5:36. So Sidekick, you're up at the top by 25 points over NASCAR John.
Not that I give out much fantasy stuff, but watch Jeff Gordon today from 21st. He's going to finish higher than that. He's going to be in the top 10.
I was going to say you'll get those place differential points.
Yep.
That's what you get there.
Yeah, I took him off my roster.
I have him on.
Kind of like I alluded to earlier, I dropped all the Hendricks.
I don't care. Yeah, the Hendricks may not be good today, but Jeff Gordon's going to finish 7th, 8th. you watch. And from 21st, that's a lot of positions.
Yeah.
All right. There you go, folks. Race today, 2:30 this afternoon, USA, 2:42 on DirecTV. Listen, get out there and enjoy your racing, and enjoy the Olympics, enjoy whatever it is that you're following along with. We'll be back here with you on Thursday night, Friday Out Sports Show, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Catch you then.